There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Headstrong. My name is Louis Strong and I host this podcast. This is a podcast where I sit down with a number of people in the public eye to talk to them about their lives and their careers, but notably I like to talk to them about their vulnerabilities to understand what the word headstrong means to them. Now joining me on this episode of Series 8 are a brotherly duo, AJ and Curtis Pritchard. We had a chat about both of them leaving their respective shows, Strictly and Love Island, and the mental health support that there is for these shows. We also talked about what it's like being self-employed and having your brotherly support growing up in the industry. So, I really hope you enjoy this episode of Headstrong. But first, a quick note from our sponsors, RCK Partners. RCK Partners specialise in helping UK businesses claim R&D tax relief across the engineering, agricultural and tech space. If you'd like to find out about this valuable source of funding for your business, head to rck.partners or follow the link in the podcast description. That's rck.partners. AJ and Curtis, thank you so much for joining me on Headstrong. How are we both doing?
Hello, hello, hello.
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. How's the summer been, boys?
Yeah, it's been, it's been very hot recently. Let's just put it like that, actually. We've actually had the odd one or two heat waves. So it's been
one or two.
Summer.
I feel like I've been abroad the whole time. It's awful. I'm in the flat here, roasting like a turkey in the oven. It's crazy.
I know the camera's on, but I've never seen you so brown, AJ.
Well, this tan, not that anybody can really see right now because you're listening, but I have gone away to Turkey for 1 week because I felt like I needed a week away and I've come back. Well, you know, when you go away, you're like, you come back a whole nother person. And this, having a top up from the British tan to a Turkey tan, I feel like I'm a new person.
The problem is it just looks like you've missed parts of your body where you've sunbathed. You've either just done your front or your back or your sides are white and everything still, AJ.
I did only sunbathe to get the front brown. That's the part that I see.
It's the only bit that matters.
Yeah, what's the point?
If you look in the mirror and you go, yeah, I can see that bit. No one looks in the mirror and goes, oh, my back's looking dark. No chance.
If you do, it's usually a bad sign. It's like, oh, I'm burnt.
Yeah, exactly. It's going, where's the aloe vera? Do you guys go away together ever? Or are you strictly, right, holidays are time to get away from the brother?
You know what? Actually, bar this year, we've always been away together. Like, I've sort of third wheeled you.
Well, if you and Abby have gone away, like, as a business thing. Like, we're working here, we're working there, so we can fit a week in at the exact same time because we work together. So we have to go away together. And then that usually be like, well, I've buy one, get one free sort of ticket, it feels like. So it's usually like a tag along scenario.
So normally I'm the third wheel. I was on the holidays, yeah. But now, no, you went on your own this time, didn't you? So yeah, you got rid of me finally, 26 yeah. years later.
Right,
yeah,
Curtis, I needed that. What's it like being back in the flat, man?
Yeah, it's more furnished than mine. Let me just put it like that. Mine is still, I don't have a sofa yet. So I'm currently on deck chairs, which were in your flat when you first moved in here, which were in another flat before you moved
in. That I originally bought.
Yeah, from IKEA. They've lasted about 8 years now, and I'm sat on them watching TV at the minute.
I've got an IKEA table that was 20 quid. And I mean, I've had this for 10 years. It looks brand new. I mean, you can't beat it at that price.
You know what? IKEA is, it's fabulous. Not a sponsor of this whatsoever, but IKEA, you're pretty good.
some of my friends at university, they used to do like a pre-drinks game where they'd go to the IKEA and they'd play hide and seek.
No way.
Yeah, so that's epic. Like, and they'd be there for like 4 hours.
No.
It was unbelievable.
That's like, actually such a good idea.
I know. And I was like, why is Tom late? And they're like, yeah, he's still hiding in the cupboard in like zone 3. I'm like, what?
Still in the wardrobe aisle.
Yeah, literally. It's unbelievable. But so both of you are now self-employed. So AJ, you left Strictly 2 years ago. Curtis, you're out the villa, my friend. Yes. Got to bring you back to reality. But I would define you as self-employed, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, definitely.
What does that look like then in terms of day-to-day structure and routine? Because are you guys that crave routine and have to fill that kind of structure to make your lives kind of like more structured?
I feel like we should start this podcast by saying myself and Curtis, we may have been brothers. We are, well, maybe. I mean, we are brothers.
We are
brothers. We've been brought up exactly the same, but we do everything completely different. I mean, we are yin and yang, and it was what works so well when we're on stage, when we're performing, when we're working together, because I crave that kind of structure. And if I haven't got that structure, I go do lally. I can't focus. I can't get things done. I have to put a structure into the day. Even if I've got nothing that day, I have to say, well, I'm going to wake up. Even when I was on holiday, for example, I would put a half an hour timer on every half an hour so I knew how long I'd sunbathe for, when I could go for a swim, and then when I'd go get a drink. I mean, that's how my brain works.
Life, AJ.
But literally, I literally cannot focus if I haven't got that structure. So every day, like before the podcast today, I was like, I have to get up. I have to go to the gym. I'll run back. I'll have a shower. I'll be prepared to sit down, do the podcast. And then I've got my whole day planned out, even though I've got no, what people would say, go to work, do a job, but I'm going to sit down and do like, here's an hour planning this kind of what I'd want to do if I was going to do a tour. And then here's another hour planning of what I'd want to do. Like, we've got our YouTube channel, Bros Talk Supercars, like some videos for that. And I have to do everything. So for me, structure is what keeps me sane. It's what keeps me ticking.
Where I like to have a structure, don't get me wrong, I love a structure there if somebody's created the structure. Me to create my own structure for myself, sometimes I don't want to say I'm lazy, because I'm not, I'm a hard worker, but I don't always create the structure, which sometimes means I don't do the work. So yeah, I'm a hard worker, but I don't always have structure.
Let's say you didn't have something in the diary, Curtis, do you reckon you would happily lie until 11?
Back to the matter, it's taking possibly you that long to answer the question means that's probably a yes, you're lying in bed.
I'm a very emotional person. I go off my emotions. If I feel like a lion, I'll have a lion. But no, I do like to get up early and start the day off. I feel if I do get up earlier, I'm more productive.
So what's your average time waking up? This is interesting for me as well.
Yeah, this is good.
Well, if I got my gym routine going,
but you don't have a gym routine.
Book the gym in for 9 p.m. every morning.
9 p.m.
No, I mean,
that sums up Kurt's brain. Kurt's gone in the morning, 9 p.m. I'm going. Wait, what? I've missed half the day.
Yeah, there you go. That's my routine. No, 9 a.m. I'll try and hit the gym in the morning if I'm going to the gym. If not, I will wake up at 9 a.m., possibly get out of bed at 10 a.m., possibly start work at 1 p.m.
Do you know what? There's nothing worse, in my opinion, than someone that snoozes. I find a snoozer so annoying.
That does bug me. If you set an alarm, don't set 10 alarms every 5 minutes. That's the thing, because they just keep going off. And I'm a person that if I set my alarm at that time, I will get up at that time. But
yeah. I appreciate being in the UK in the summer because the sun does come up so early. So I always like to leave a gap in my blinds because I have blackout blinds. So the original reason why I had blackout blinds was the, I'm going to work through the night. I need to sleep through the day because when we do like tours or when we're doing Strictly or you don't, your sleep patterns are not normal. So the blackout blinds literally saved my life when I was working through the night and trying to sleep through the day. But now, like,
you shut yourself in the foot because now you have to leave them open.
Now I leave them open so I can see the sunlight. So I feel like I'm waking up. And Abby, my girlfriend who lives with me, she's like, well, I want blackout blinds down so she can sleep throughout the whole bloody day and night. I'm like, what is happening?
Love that. AJ, if you didn't have that structure then, do you think that would affect you like mentally?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like if I'm not ticking off jobs and I'm not kind of getting things done in my life, then mentally I do struggle. I struggle to kind of just have that kind of get up and go. My fear is like I'm always going to waste time or I'm not going to tick something off. So if somebody sends me, for example, an email or a WhatsApp, because your phone's always attached to you now, which is very unhealthy, I do have to say that, but I have to reply to that in the moment, on the dot. Like I feel like if it's taken more than 5 minutes to reply, like I'm going to miss the opportunity, or it's like, and that's how my brain works. And I think that on one side is really good and positive for the work side, but it's quite hard for me to have that kind of work life kind of balance. I do find that hard. I like to work 24/7 because we've chosen, but you see that, I hate this when I see it on TikTok, there's that reel or voice that says, I don't work 9 to 5 now, I'm self-employed, so now I work 24/7. Yeah. And I hate to say it, it's bloody true. When you are self-employed, you are non-stop working. But I appreciate that because I like to work hard now. So I hopefully in the future, I tell myself this, then I can take time off in the future whenever I want and do what I want because I've worked really hard when I'm young. But I know that in the future, when I am older, I'll still be the same. I'll still want to work 24/7.
It's bigger businesses.
Exactly. Right. What I want to do is, I want to rewind then. I want to rewind to growing up when you were wee little boys.
Ooh, bringing it back.
Yeah. Let's throw it back to you. I mean, back down to the childhood. But I appreciate the brotherly banter so much, literally. Because this is my first ever three-hander on this podcast, which is also very exciting. But so it's always very interesting to talk about kind of growing up and what people's parents were like, and in terms of how they raised you. So how would you define your childhood together with your parents? Were they strict on you guys, or were they quite lenient? Did they have high expectations?
I think with dad being a dance teacher and mum also teaching Pilates, keep fit, beauty, doing all of these things, their work hours were never just a 9 till 5 job. So that started us off, I'd say, with our work relationship from a young age. Like we were able to, we've always seen our parents work all these different long hours. So we've had
It's the studio's downstairs, we live upstairs, so again work life is kind of, well, it always crosses over. There was never a like you're at home because you live at home, you go to work, you're at work, whereas in our scenario it was always that same area, same mentality. Work is home, home is work.
But definitely our parents loved us having fun. We were into extreme sports when we were kids, into all of these things, mountain boarding, snowboarding, go-karting, quad biking, and our parents loved us to have fun, and they always wanted us to never dance. That was one of the things
they wanted us to be kids and break our arms and do kid things, whatever, get dirty, get messy,
have fun. They never wanted us to dance, but then we were always around dancing. Our dad was an ex-world champion, and he always took us to the major dance competitions at Blackpool and in all other places, and he would be judging them. We would always be there in the arcade, spending his money, having fun. We'd never actually do the dancing, though. Then an opportunity came up as we grew up, as we got older, and this opportunity to go on TV to do a dance program happened. And this is what got us into the dancing. And our parents were like, hopefully they're not going to continue dancing, but we fell in love with it. And then we took the dancing up, and then they just threw their lives into us, and 100% was focused on the dancing then. Would I say our parents were strict, though? I don't know, in different mannerisms, really. I wouldn't say we never got grounded and things like that.
But yeah.
They always had not a bad opinion, but a good opinion on this is how you should do this, or this is what you should do, or don't maybe eat that if you're going to be doing this. So they're always helping us, and I've been parents, really good parents.
I think it comes down to the child themselves. Like for me, example, I was always very, very self-motivated. So when we were dancing and doing all that kind of thing and traveling, I would hate to go on holiday. Like for me, having 7 days on holiday, 14 days, 2 weeks was like too long away from dancing. I was like, well, how would I be able to keep up my momentum if I'm that? And like when I would train and practice, I'd always be like, dad would be like, well, we need to dance for 2 minutes each dance, so 10 minutes of cardio nonstop. I was like, well, if the competition's going to be 2 minutes of dance, so 10 minutes, I need to at least do 3 minutes of dance. So I've got more time and my feet are bleeding and I'm in pain, so that when I come to do a dance competition, I'll be relaxed and happy. So I would always go above and beyond. So my parents would be like, mum would be like, oh, you can have a break now. I'd be like, no, I can't. So I was very self-motivated, which definitely applies to how I live my life now.
I think you very much enjoyed having the dance school attached to the house, didn't you?
Well, I was about to say, yeah.
The only way to become number one in the world at something is to do it, eat, sleep and breathe it 24/7. And that is an opportunity we had. So I was like, why am I going to waste having a dance school downstairs and not use the space when it's free?
See, I hated that. I hated having a dance school attached to the house, because I'm very much a house is your home for relaxing and doing your homely things, whatever that may be. And then you'd go out to an office to work, or go out to a dance space to work, or do anything. I always and still do work much better out of the house. And that's why I always struggled with the dance school in the house.
That's really tricky, actually, because you can't. When do you switch off? And it sounds like AJ didn't switch off.
Well, we both didn't really. We were always doing stuff, but I feel like I needed that switch off thing. So I would always, every now and again, go out to my friends. That would be my switch off. Go see my mates that were around. Go do something like that, which would just take my mind completely away from being in the work environment and the dance environment and home, and then just do my own fun things and stuff. So that would be my switch off, and not coping mechanism, but my, you know, my fun period of not doing the dancing.
Yeah, absolutely. Am I right in saying that you're only one academic year apart?
Yes.
In some ways, that's an absolute blessing at school. In other ways, I have no doubt it's absolute nightmare. But what was that like then, kind of growing up, being so close in terms of age? Did you have each other's backs at school? Like, what was that like?
I'd say for me, I'd say it probably it's a better thing for me, really, being the younger one and having an older brother there.
Because yeah.
It helps out. You've got an older brother in the school already, so he knows his way around. You know, if you're lost, you can always speak to him. Makes anything like that easy. If there was somebody around, like in secondary school, we always had the odd, I'm not going to name them, but there's two people which were always, I'm not going to call them bullies, but they were people which just were a nightmare sometimes. And that me being in year seven, perhaps coming in, if they ever, anything happened to me, then I could always go to AJ. Things like that always helped out, having a brother in school. And actually, to be fair, I hung around with you in year seven and eight and all your friends for most of it, didn't I? Seven and eight. I had my own friends and stuff, but I was always with you and your friends. So for me, there was no disadvantages to actually having you at school whatsoever.
That's not something I've ever really thought about.
There is one thing. I couldn't become head boy in primary school because you became head boy the year before me. And they said two brothers can't become head boy.
They said it looked like favoritism, but
rubbish.
If it's the right person, come on.
That's what I say.
Exactly.
If they're the right person for the job, they deserve the job.
Yes.
Curtis, you didn't deserve the job, dude. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Little must have been, yeah.
Oh, no, what a disaster. I mean, so what age did you guys, when you kind of get fully immersed in terms of the dancing?
I think when it was, we were 10 and 11 and this kind of pilot scheme for this kind of baby ballroom it was came along, and thankfully it was never aired, never shown on TV.
Yeah.
Did awful, looked crying, probably everything that you don't want to see on TV. The next day, as soon as mum and dad were like, so do you want to continue or do you want to stop? And I said, well, I want to do it. And as soon as I say I want to do something, it's like instantly everything. Like if I'm going to do something, I do it 110% or there's no point doing it. So for me, it was from that moment I said, yeah, I'm going to do it. There's like, there's no stopping me, like sort of thing mentality. And that even came down to, I remember there was one thing, it came to the only one thing that I remember, funny enough, from high school, which put up a weird barrier, was that the PE teachers were like, well, because they had lots of footballers and lots of rugby players in our school that were quite good. They went, well, dance isn't a sport. I was like, whoa, whoa. I was very kind of like headstrong child. I was like, well, okay, if you can say that then, doesn't matter. Like, I would be the one that would come back in my Mercedes all happy at the end of kind of like done really well. And kind of the footballers and the rugby players hadn't actually made their career of what they thought they were going to do. And I think the school realized that, and the PE teachers actually now seeing where I am are kind of quite changed their opinion of what different sports are or what different kids are going to do in the future. Because if somebody's going to do something in this day and age, whatever it is, you can make a career out of anything. And I think that's the one positive thing about growing up now. You could say, oh, I like cutting grass. You can make a YouTube channel about cutting grass, be a millionaire and be happy. Like, and I think that has changed the opinion of what is the older generations of being like, well, no, that's not a real job. Well, there is no such thing as a real job or not a real job or the real world, or it's whatever your world is your real world. I think that's a positive thing about moving forward. And it's what I say to people, like, you can make a living out of anything, just be happy. And if you're going to do it 100% and you will get there.
Yeah. I think that's a great thing. What you're saying, actually, people should actually look at the person and not the career path they're wanting to take sometimes.
Cause we were always compared to each other. Yeah. Whereas I think that's one thing that, it's kind of very short-sighted. Like, they see family members or brothers, sisters, but they're the same people. Well, no, actually, if you didn't know that they were brothers or if you didn't know that they were sisters or whoever, like, it doesn't matter. You should judge that person as an individual about how they're progressing, how they're doing good, bad, whatever their traits are. And I think that's something really important that people really do overlook sometimes. And that's something working in the TV industry I've noticed, definitely, because we always do a lot of things together now. And it's kind of explained to people, well, we are brothers, but we're two very different people and have two very different passions, like you would do, because that's what humans are. Everybody's unique.
Everyone is individual. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, just going off from that school thing in terms of like your teachers, PE teachers, what was that like in terms of dance being discussed amongst maybe your peers as well? Was there, because I work at a school now as well. And I think that it would be fully, fully embraced and accepted. It's a primary school here. So it's like, I think that any discussion of that now, if one of the guys was doing dance full time, everyone would be like, oh my God, that is the sickest thing.
Yeah, definitely.
What's that toxic, was there ever any toxic masculinity at school, like discussing that? Like, because I know that there's like, that, you know, they don't quite fully comprehend it. And they go, oh, that's so whatever. That's so boring.
Yeah, if you're coming into school on a Monday with a dodgy fake tan that you put on from a competition on a Sunday.
Elaborate, AJ. What was our fake tan like on a Sunday? So we just had to. So basically, the shirts that we wore were V's in our dancing.
Like you'd see on Strictly Come Dancing, you'd see them go for their spray tans. But we would try off. Fake tans would probably not be so premium.
Well, we would only do our chest.
And we'd only do our chest.
So you'd have just a fake tan.
The reverse lorry driver.
Literally, yeah.
So imagine going into a PE class, getting changed, and having just a V fake tanned on your chest in the boys' changing room.
And people would say stuff, and people would be like, why are you doing this or that? Or there'd be like sarky sort of comments. But I think as soon as we got to say, I was like, well, I'm going to Italy to represent my country because I'm number one in the UK and I'm trying to become number one in the world. They'd be like, oh, you're traveling the world and you're doing it. And then when you'd be like, yes, I've just become European champion. And they'd be like, what?
Actions speak louder than words.
And I think that's like that. Sort of kind of like headstrong child being like, it's hard. Like, I'm somebody who's like, well, I'm going to do it. I don't care what anybody's saying. Like, I don't care. But if you're somebody that does take that to heart, I would feel very sad for them because I can imagine a lot of dancers or people that would have been really good in the dance world would have given up because of people or certain areas probably don't bring that positivity. But I think definitely from now, primary school, secondary school, and the market that's out there, you could even use the word TikTok, that sort of, I hate to say it, but it does come back down to money. Like, you can see the careers that people have made out of doing 15-second videos, which half it's not even real dancing. And you're like, but fantastic. How the hell have they made a career? But they have. And I think these sort of openings kind of open people's eyes much more. And you'll have your top football players, like Jesse Lingard now joins TikTok and doing dancing. Raheem Sterling doing TikTok, doing dancing. Like, it's that the complete role reversal of 10 years. Like, you'd be like, no, that's never going to happen. Whereas now it's like, that's there. They make more money from doing TikTok than playing football sometimes.
I think Strictly and things like that have definitely helped.
Yeah, mainstream TV.
Broaden the horizon on dancing and open people's eyes to it and the career that you can have with it. I think that's helped a lot, definitely.
But definitely as a child, it was hard. But I think it's changed now for the positive. So definitely, I always think, if there's a positive, I take the positive. If there's a negative out there, I don't even bother.
If it's a constructive criticism, I will take it on board. If it's something which it's is not usually, so is it, random, so pathetic that somebody said because they're a keyboard warrior, I just don't even think about it. Or if somebody said it to my face, I just don't respond, don't think about it. And how I got through school, if anyone did ever say anything to me, for example, if I had that V of fake tan, I would think to myself, yeah, I do look ridiculous, and I would laugh about it. Like, yeah, I'd be like, sure, you know what? That isn't normal, but I'm doing it for the career that I've chose, the passion I love to do, and I'm representing England in the world whilst doing it. So I'm happy to look like that and have somebody say that because the progression in my career is much better than, well, other people at that point. So I was happy. You know, I was loving life.
When did you first become aware of your own mental health?
I would say quite late, I would say, in a way, like, because I've always been a very positive person. So I've just gone through things in a positive light and always thought we're not having to walk miles to drink fresh water. So I've always thought we're in a good position, if you know what I mean. And then I'd say as I've got older, I've started to realize my own mental health and things that I need to sometimes do to settle myself or ground myself. Let's say I'm a bit nervous or a bit anxious because I'm about to do something new. I know if I close my eyes for 5 minutes now, just breathe in, breathe out, I can calm myself, relax myself, and I know I'll then perform much better after it. So I'd say as I've got a bit older, I've learned to handle myself and my mental health.
Sorry to interrupt the episode, but a quick word from our series sponsor, RCK Partners. If you're looking to take advantage of R&D tax credits to boost your business's cash flow, RCK Partners can help you. Simply head to rck.partners or follow the link in the podcast description. Now, let's get back to the podcast.
I think it's probably much younger than what you think, Curtis, because we were in primary school and we... a very small primary school. So we had like 20 kids in the class, if that, like 15 maybe. And we lost two people in the same year at primary school, being, how old were we? Like, okay, 9, 10.
Subconsciously then, this created the start of it.
Yeah, so we lost, one of the friends was shared a birthday with Curtis. She had leukemia. And then there was another kid in a year group below who had a freak accident, unfortunately, and passed away. Mm-hmm. And there was another boy in Kirkshire that had half a heart and was supposed to die at the age of, well, 9, then 10, then 11, then 12. And he's now like 23 or something.
I just went to his wedding.
You just went to his wedding, yeah.
Which was very weird.
So dealing with loss very, very young and actually going to the funeral and acknowledging what life is and what death is, I think that kind of helped us. And we were one of the only kind of kids that went to the funeral, and all the other kids didn't go to the funeral. But because we kind of dealt with it in our own way and kind of saw what life is, what death is, and what a funeral actually stands for, we didn't have nightmares. Whereas all the other kids in the school who didn't go to funeral had nightmares. They couldn't understand why their friend was there one day and their friend wasn't there the next day. And I think from there onwards, we had an appreciation for life, very much so. Mm. And I think when it comes down to mental health and maybe kind of talking to a psychiatrist or that kind of side of stuff, that I originally was like one of them kind of guys that would be like, no, I'll never talk to a psychiatrist, I'm never going to need that. Actually having the accident with Abby over a year ago now and actually talking to somebody and going through the situation and having a different opinion on kind of talking to somebody is a helpful way for you to de-scramble your mind and put things into order. It's definitely helped. And that's only me being, what, 26, 27 now. So I think early on, we appreciated life because of a certain milestone and marking. But actually later on in life, for me being 26, 27, talking to a psychiatrist and understanding that I needed help and not being a hypocrite, being saying, Abby, you need to talk to somebody. but then not actually taking their own advice in your own kind of area would have been the most awful for myself. So definitely later on in life, in the aspect of actually talking to somebody. And I think it's really important to talk to somebody, because it's just about having that, for me personally, having just, I don't know what you'd describe it as,
being able to pressure. That's
well, just throwing something at a wall and then throwing something else at a wall, and you throw all these things at a wall and like some things stick, some things don't stick, but you've got it off your chest. So you've relieved, you've kind of got rid of that weight that was kind of holding you back, maybe.
It's a gas canister that you keep filling up, and if you don't release it, it'll blow up. It's the best way of looking at it.
I don't like that description, but you can have that one.
It's a great way of looking at it.
That's your description.
It's a gas canister, it's filling up, and you have to release some of it by talking it, getting it out of your body to allow more good things and other things to fill back up.
Okay, that's Kurt's description. That's not mine, guys.
I think it's really important, as you say, AJ, actually. It's like, therapy gives you that clarity, because I don't think how often does somebody, unless you're very self-conscious and you sit down and you do breathing exercises, you do meditate, are you self-aware of your own feelings and kind of you pinch yourself and you go, you're here in the moment, here right now, how am I actually feeling? And yeah, as you say, it does build up to an extent. I'm not going full gas canister here, but it does build up in the sense that you don't know how to release it and you don't know what your outlet is. And speaking to that someone can help tremendously.
Yeah. And we did something with Marie Curie. It was about bereavement, and it was talking to different people who had different losses and some of people, how they dealt with the loss. And the thing is, with loss, everything is always different. Like, you can have somebody dies suddenly, you're not prepared for it. Or for example, our grandma passed away. She was 90 odd. We thought she had an extra 8 years in her. She got dementia. We'd prepared ourselves for her death. Well, unfortunately, 5-6 years before she passed away. So when she passed away, it was okay. It sounds awful, but it was okay, because we'd already said our goodbyes multiple times for so many years. So we deal with situation differently. And I think each person's situation is very different, and it's very hard to kind of say to somebody, you understand how they feel, but we've gone through loss, sudden, unexpected, freak accidents, death when it's kind of expected. So we can kind of say to people, like, we understand how you feel, because we've been in that situation. And it's quite unheard of, or maybe not, I don't know. We're so young in reality. We're only 27 now, but we've dealt with so much in our life, and actually being able to talk to other people and doing a lot with Chelsea and Westminster Hospital now, and doing a lot with mental health and young people over these past 2 years, being locked away in their rooms and being able to get out of their rooms, and how to deal with the pressures of life itself out there. And we try and help people as much as we can, because when we help other people, or with Abby, for instance, she helps other people, it helps us as well deal with our situations. And I think that's something very important that people forget. Like, yes, we are doing things to help other people, but it's helping us as well. And I'd be lying if I said it wasn't. It is also a bit slightly, what's the word? Like, it's selfish in a way. It's like, kind of like, I'm helping other people.
Self-rewarding,
selfish. Mm. I don't know. People have different opinions of it, but I'm going to be open and honest. If I'm helping somebody else deal with a situation, I'm probably helping myself in some way at the same time.
But I don't think that's selfish open about at all. That. I don't think that's selfish at all. I think that's part of the reward, isn't it? Like, you're helping somebody else and you go, hang on a minute. That's why it's such a nice feeling, isn't it? Because you're helping somebody and you go, hang on a minute, this is actually quite a good feeling for me.
I know I help people because it makes me feel good.
Yeah, we do a lot with charities. Yeah. Like, I even got a phone call yesterday from UNICEF to say, which I've even forgot about, I have a direct debit going out of my account each month for a certain amount of money. And they said, thank you very much for the direct debit. And they were calling me on the phone. I was like, I don't really have any time to talk, but they say, thank you for this. And then actually I was like, oh, I'm going to leave that direct debit because I know it's helping people. And they equivalent of however many gallons of water that was, clean, fresh water to people that needed it. And we do a lot of work with another app called We Are Eight. And it's a fantastic app. Actually, you should check it out. And you watch an advert, you get paid for watching the advert, and you pay that money forward to your chosen charity. Like,
loads of different charities.
It's fantastic. And there's really so many of these like B corporation companies that are setting the standards moving forward about actually being a company that does make money. But at the end of the day, it makes money for so many millions of charities out there and helps so many billions of people. And knowing that you're doing that and having fun at the same time, it's brilliant. It makes you feel good. And I think it comes back down to what you just said, like your mental health. What is it that makes you happy? For me, I love going to the gym. I love releasing good endorphins. I have to do it every single day. I've done it today, like every single day I do. And it's just about finding something that works for you. And when you do, you kind of like, yeah, I can conquer the world now. I can do my tasks or whatever that may be.
Yeah, I think that's bang on. Like, what Curtis, what would you say your coping mechanism is, or something where you kind of are making sure that you're looking after yourself?
See, for me, I would say it is talking to my friends is the biggest coping mechanism. If I am ever going through anything, it's talk to my family, talk to my friends, talk to the people closest to me, the most important people around me. It could be my granddad. But I would say for me, I like to meditate and do things like that. You know, I do like to work out. I go in and out of routines of working out. I love when I work out to set myself a routine that I go every morning. If I'm going to the gym, it would be in the morning. I'd set myself an alarm, wake up, hit the gym, and then I'd do some meditating straight after. And that would set me up for the day to make me feel very good. If I don't hit the gym, I will try and make sure I get some natural sunlight, because being self-employed does mean you can go out a lot because you have more free time. But if you're working, it does mean you're inside a lot more sometimes, cooped up on your own. So it's get out, get some sunlight and go on a walk and spend time with my girlfriend. These are my coping mechanisms to get through the life that we've chose, really, being in the public eye, being out there and to enjoy things.
Right. I'm going to go strictly, then I'm going to go Love Island. All right. First things first. What part of Strictly do you actually miss, AJ? Apart from, obviously, not the late nights.
No, I think for me, it's, as you've probably gathered by now, I love putting my time and energy into projects. Mm. And for me, I'm always happy as long as I'm using my energy in a positive way, moving forward with whatever that may be. The one part I do miss about Strictly, I always love doing the arena tour. So you do the whole of Strictly. We as pros would start at the beginning of August and we'd finish towards mid-December. And you are exhausted, obviously, by the end of it. And like a crazy person, I would always do a pantomime for them 3 weeks off. And then I'd finish the pantomime on like a Sunday night and I would start rehearsals for the arena tour on Monday morning. And the great thing about the arena tours that's so different about the show. On the show, I am teaching somebody. I am fundamentally being a life coach to them on a Monday morning, picking them up from what's had maybe a bad result on the Sunday, teaching them the routine. By Wednesday, they feel like emotionally distraught. They're never going to get this routine for 12 million people live on a Saturday. And then by the time it comes to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'm building them up mentally. I'm like, they can conquer the world. They're faster than Usain Bolt. They can run further than Mo Farah. Whatever it is, I don't care. I'm going to make them feel like they are God. So that by the time they perform live, when they're most exhausted on a Saturday, that they are the bee's knees. They are going to conquer the world. And then it's like, okay, if they do really well, great. Most of the time, it doesn't always go so well. So then you're like, damn it. Then they're broken back down to the knees. So it's quite emotionally hard to keep them at a high. And it's a roller coaster every single week. But the thing is about doing the tour that is so different about doing the show that is both are live. Both have got, well, one's got 12 million viewers. So if you know you mess up, you're going to be YouTube sensation for all the wrong reasons. But when you do the tour, there is no pressure. There is no pressure whatsoever. You go out there, people have bought tickets to watch you and they just want to see you have fun. So you can go out there, you can scream, you can grab the mic, you can say, let's do a Mexican wave for the O2. And it is the best feeling in the world knowing that the pro themselves has no pressure, really. And the celebrity themselves has no pressure. So they have the time of their life and they feel like a rock star. So I feel like as a professional, like you get to drop a lot of stress of worrying about your partner so much, about making sure that everything's correct. As long as they've got the shoes, they should be good. But the arena tour should make sure they've got their own shoes. So you can just go out there and have fun. So definitely the touring side, the fun side, the stress is gone. And all you're going to do is smile and wave and just kind of take the energy in.
Has your partners ever forgot their shoes?
Yeah, my partners, I feel like I get the partners always forget their shoes. It's a nightmare. Saffron, oh I love you, but you were the worst.
Say Saffron then.
Saffron was the worst. Oh my God. But the best in so many ways, but Oh, she stressed me out sometimes. But I love
she
her.
She was lovely, Saffron, wasn't
she? Her and the whole family. Oh, yeah,
she's
brilliant.
Lovely. She's great.
The Barkers, hilarious.
I mean, I've spoken to a few other people who have been on Love Island, Curtis, about that support and structure of mental health. It's interesting to think and look at it, AJ, from Strictly's perspective, because it sounds like it's absolutely draining for you in terms of that support that you have to give that other person.
Yes,
what's
it is,
that
definitely.
Support like? Because I know that, Curtis, when you were in, there was that infrastructure in Love Island when you came out, of that support, producers calling you after. And I spoke to, you know, Adam the other day from this series, and how much it stepped up, and you know how persistent it is when they're even in the villa every single day. They have to go sit down on a half an hour Zoom and chat to a psychiatrist. You know, it's crazy.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's like they really
that's crazy. They stepped up that much.
They have upped it, because how it was when I was on there. So I did season 5,
Strictly
2019.
The 4 years that I did, from the first year, it was like, oh, there's a psych available. But by the time I finished the 4 years that I did, and I was very happy. Like, then the psych was like, so if you want to call, like, you've got free lifetime cover. Like, I don't know if he's being paid by the hour, I don't know, but it was like, I'll give you a call each week if you need it. This is for like life. And the same with I'm a Celebrity. The aftercare is fantastic. We've just done another TV show which will be coming out soon. The aftercare is fantastic, and it's very good to know that aftercare is there for everybody. And it's very important that the aftercare is followed up with pre-care. I don't know if that's the right word. You obviously take a psychiatrist take a psychiatrist test. I don't know. You talk to a psychiatrist to check that you are okay before you even enter the TV shows. And I think that's really important as well.
Because when I was on Love Island, so season 5, 2019, we didn't have to talk to a psych every single day being in there. No Zoom.
That's
calls.
A lot.
We didn't have to do that, but we could 24 hours a day whenever we wanted to talk to a psych. No, there was somebody there on base, on hand, that we could go and talk to. We could sit in a room with them and talk to them. And then up till today now, I could still be having aftercare. I could be having it for the rest of my life if I wanted it from Love Island. Now, before my season, I don't know if that was the same situation, the same cases. But from mine, I know the aftercare was upped to the max. We could see anybody whenever we wanted, and we still can up till today. See anybody whenever we want.
And I do have to say, there's a lot of negativity that comes around a lot of reality TV shows, Love Island for so many different reasons, Strictly I'm a Celeb not so much in reality. But the one thing that I think is really great is the people that go onto these shows want to go on these shows, and I think we have to remember that.
But they don't always realize what the show actually
they don't understand the repercussions of it, I think.
Yeah, they don't understand sometimes, but the reason why they want to go on there, because they wanted to. For example, this year, 2-3 people, Jacks, who pulled out, like, they had the wholehearted honesty to say that this is not feeling right for myself, and they stepped off the show. And I think that's really good that they felt like they could. The show obviously allowed them to, if anything. And at the end of the day, nobody backlash came to them and said, well, Jacks left because he wanted to go on holiday somewhere else. Well, no, everybody understood that it's people's understanding of these shows understand that it is a lot on them. And I think that's changed a lot now, the opinion of the shows.
And with Love Island, definitely, it's a very tedious show that you do not realise. Because the chats that you're doing, they last from 1 hour to 3 hours, each chat you do. The game shows, they last from 1 hour to 4 hours. And all of these things, and you've got to think, you've got the audience watching you. Then you think, do I like this girl? Do I love this girl? Do I like that girl that's now come in? What's the audience going to think? And these are things that go through people's heads in there. Because I spoke to everyone.
It drives you mad.
Yeah, and it's slowly, each day a bit of tiredness kicks in as well. But all of these thoughts and emotions slowly drain your tank day after day after day in that place. And when you've been in there for 9 weeks, it becomes hard and it becomes very long. And if you don't look after yourself and either talk to somebody or try and do the things that you enjoy doing, that's when people start to struggle in there and realize this isn't the place for me.
Every big TV show, when people see it, the one thing I would say to them, if they ever want to go on it or do anything, would be like,
one, it's TV.
TV is waiting. Waiting for everything. Waiting to be told to go in. Waiting to do a conversation, waiting to do a game show, waiting to do the right moment, waiting, hold that conversation. Cameras aren't ready.
That's one of the biggest things.
Then do the conversation. It's everything is always waiting. And when you're told somebody in their normal day life, wait,
Yeah, but
it, just wait.
It's not just
you start
that.
Questioning everything in your head.
It's let's say we're angry at each other or upset at each other, which is even worse sometimes.
You forget you really why you're upset with somebody.
Well, no, the waiting just draws that emotion out, and having that emotion built up and inside you for let's say a whole day, you're exhausted by the end of it.
Yeah.
And this is what people don't realize is hard on TV as well. It is a waiting game. You can't just randomly roam and have conversations freely. It's TV. It has to be orchestrated to a certain element.
Yeah, there's a storyline there.
Yeah.
Or else it wouldn't be good to watch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right, Curtis, I'll ask you as the outsider perspective on this.
Ooh.
Strictly Curse, yes or no? Is it real?
100% real, Strictly Curses. It's one of more of a dating show than Love Island, Strictly is. And I'll tell you, it honestly, genuinely is. So I did Dance with the Stars for 3 years. So
yeah.
It's the Irish version of Strictly and fantastic program. But imagine this. So you're learning a new skill. You're with an incredibly attractive professional woman or professional guy. And then you're up close and personal with them nonstop. Now, this person is almost like your leader, somebody that's in charge of you. They're teaching you. So you almost naturally, you feel slightly not under them, but you feel like I'm in awe of this person, learning from them. So I love this person already because they're helping me. And then you add the touch element. You get close to each other 12 hours a day and you're touching hands. Your faces are constantly close together. You start feeling these excited emotions and feelings just from the dancing because it's all acting. Then you confuse these with actual emotions of love and lust for other things. And then this is where the Strictly Curse kicks in.
I think a lot of time, like when you say it's, if you're single, you're single, hey, have a good time, whatever. But what I would say is to anybody that's going on the show in a relationship side, like it's a fantastic show. But if there are cracks in your relationship already,
don't do it.
It's just going to make the cracks more obvious. I'm being paid to teach you. I'm being paid fundamentally to hold the door, carry your bag, make your life perfect. I'm being paid to do all of that, to get you a drink, to make sure that you're relaxed. Like I always went above and beyond. So like I would feel like I had to do that because that's the way we've been brought
and
up.
And the rumba, the dance of love, looking in each other's eyes.
The rumba's the least romantic dance.
But it's different things.
It's a nightmare week.
Yeah, but when you're constantly looking in somebody's eyes, it's just these things.
We go cross-eyed.
Which create chemical reactions in your body and it creates the animalistic part of the human instinct which wants to get with somebody, reproduce and be happy.
I think it's just cracks. And if there's something that's already not good in your relationship, it's just going to heighten that scenario.
Sure.
I think that's the best single line sentence to describe that scenario.
So is it true? Yes.
if you're having relationship troubles, do not go on Strictly.
Yeah. Should come with a big disclaimer. Do not enter.
Well, like the names have just been announced for Strictly this year. And I'm not going to say anything because I've not even seen
I
just feel like there's so many good people out there that I'd be like, oh my God, this person would be brilliant. That person would be brilliant.
But this
and
is
then
the
like,
enjoyable thing about Strictly. Some of the people that perhaps you don't know or it's from a different programs which you don't watch or something, and then you see them grow. You see this journey and that's
but I prefer to see the person that I already know grow in the journey for more.
Yeah, swings and roundabouts. Yeah, true.
I think I read an article the other day being like, oh, they're running out of people to ask. And I was literally reading it and I was thinking, no, they're bloody not.
No,
there's
an exhaustive list of people who'd no doubt be putting their hands up to go on it. I don't know if you know, like how does it work in terms of who they pick? Is it the producers going to people, or do you think that there are people that would actually actively go to BBC and or
Strictly? 100%. Yeah,
people like, hey, like the agents and the people themselves, like, hey, I want to go on it. You need this person. My client's great, blah, 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 whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, it's the producer, the exec of the channel, the commissioners of the TV shows themselves. Like it's a massive like decision of
what's going to make good TV, right?
Yeah.
Good TV, I think,
the producers are having their fingers so crossed that Helen Skelton's having a serious romance.
Yeah. I spoke to her the other day and she didn't say anything actually because she was at Carfest Curs. I think she's going to be great.
Who do you partner her up with, AJ?
She's small, isn't she?
This is the thing on Strictly as well. The partners go off height.
Gawker. I can imagine her being
so it's
great.
All done on height, nothing else.
I mean, it's not all done on height, but you've got to think.
But the I can't dance with AJ a supermodel, can I?
That puts you in a bit of a tricky situation, AJ.
Yeah. So it does make a difference height. I can wear Cuban heel, but 2.5 inches is probably all it's going to get me.
Saying, AJ, keep your eyes up.
Yeah.
How you look? Keep your eyes up, AJ.
My head's up, honestly. But no, I think Gawker and Helen Skelton, they would be a great match. And both kind of, I think, would probably have that same sort of mentality. And Helen Skelton, like Blue Peter, like she was thrown into everything. Like she's got no fears whatsoever.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, tell you what, did you ever get a Blue Peter badge? This is obviously going off topic. Did you get one?
Oh my God, yeah. I performed on Blue Peter. And I did this like jive from Britain's Got Talent. It was brilliant. But it was like one of the weirdest things ever. I went and then somebody was trying to change the light in the ceiling. And he fell from the ladder. He was fine. He broke his hip and broke his leg, but he was fine. But then the producers were like, so we don't know if you're going to be scarred for life knowing that you're going to perform after somebody's broke the leg and the hip. I was like, I've just seen it. It makes no difference if I perform or not. So I was like, I want to perform. We did it live. Brilliant. Great memory. Hilarious. I'll never forget it. But at the end of the day, I wanted my badge, so I had to perform.
Is that my hip action in that performance is the best it's ever been?
Oh my word. Right, let's switch over to Love Island then, Curtis. When you look back on it, do you reflect on that as a positive experience and like a good thing that happened? Or yeah, are there things that you think you would have changed when you were in there?
No, I look back at it on as a positive performance. Honestly, great performance, by me. No, positive experience and everything in there. It honestly changed my life. So I was on Dancing with the Stars for 3 years before that. And then I went on to Love Island. And honestly, I went from like 20 odd thousand followers to came off with 1.5 million Instagram followers. Like it does boost your career drastically. My journey in the villa was a roller coaster. It had ups, it had downs, it had lefts and blimmin' rights. Would I have changed anything? Not really, if you want the honest truth. Maybe, if I'm really thinking about it, I wouldn't have thrown all of my eggs into one basket at the start. Perhaps maybe have taken a little bit longer and got to know more people instead of sticking with one person at the start. But at that moment in time, it felt right, so I went with it. So in reality, if I went back, I would probably do the same thing again. Yeah, I probably would. I loved it.
You've both now got like heaps of Instagram followers and in terms of just other social medias as well. How conscious are you of what you post in terms of having that responsibility? Because you've got young audiences that are viewing your stuff and people can get it wrong. How conscious are you of kind of what you're posting?
Actually, to be fair, think about it, I am. So have you seen the TikTok or the video going around at the minute where people fill their mouths up with water and then they get like a pita bread and they slap each other?
Yeah, quality.
Yeah. So my girlfriend wanted to do that with me. And I said to her, I can't do that. People will say that I'm beating you if I've hit her with a rap across the face or somewhere. And for the first
time... In context, if you wrote it down...
I thought to myself, I can't blimmin' slap you. One, I feel bad slapping you with a pita bread, and two, it looks bad. So therefore I thought about what is the audience going to say and what are they going to do about it. So yeah, it does affect you what you post, having yourself 100%, opened up.
Yeah, no, I always consider what I'm posting.
I try. We're not,
there's so many
people,
things that
though.
I could post that would be hilarious, that'd be a bit maybe x-rated things, which have unfortunately come from TikTok or something. The things that are funny, like they're like oh, that's actually quite funny, and I'm like, well, nah, I don't think that's...
I mean,
the right
this is getting onto a whole other subject though, like comedy and stuff, like what you can use in comedy.
That's the problem. Like when you, I think something's funny.
I don't
want
to say something
funny,
too
but
sensitive.
Somebody will be like, "Oh, well, why have you done that?" I'm like, it was a joke.
I feel comedy should be an element that is allowed to express and really cross the boundaries.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. When you watch it, like, if you sit down to watch a comedy show of a certain person you like,
I don't want
Ricky Gervais, whoever it may be,
to have
like,
to filter
himself. I bought a ticket to see him be funny and not be like, oh no, I can't do that joke.
I don't want to see him filter himself because of his art and his amazing talent and what he does.
Yeah. Hey, we've gone completely off
topic.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like I feel like everything's becoming so cancel culture that you're like,
yeah,
oh my God,
it is, isn't it?
I can't have an opinion. And then if I have an opinion, then why have you got an opinion on this? You should have an opinion on that. And that's one thing I do think is quite sad about us in our positions slightly, I feel like sometimes you do become a bit vanilla, whereas you're like, well, I want a bit chocolate chip. But now I just stick to being a bit vanilla because you can't offend any of the chocolate chip people.
One thing is you can't please everybody in the world that we live in, because everybody has a different opinion and somewhere, somewhat, it will clash with you. But the main thing is...
I couldn't imagine being in school right now. Imagine being in school right now. It'd be a nightmare.
Do what makes you happy and what you enjoy and what puts a smile on your face. That's all I'm going to say to people out there.
So we're going
to
see a pita bread video later, Curtis.
Of me.
Slapping yourself.
But I'm pretty sure... I'm just a point of information here. I'm pretty sure it's a wrap, not a pita bread. I'm pretty sure if you hit her with a pita bread, she'd knock her out, mate.
I got a French roll, I have. That's why I've
Take my
around.
Baguette.
Yeah.
Oh my word. Right, I've got to ask you, when it gets to Christmas, when you guys go home and you're sat around the table, does it ever get a bit like, I've done this, I've done that? Do you get that competitive element in terms of your lives, or are you actually kind of, because you're such a tight brotherly...
It's more recap.
Yeah, I've never been...
I forget what I've done in the year.
I'd like to do I'm a Celebrity. That's one of the programs you've done, which I would definitely like to do. But bar that, really, we've never been, I've done this, you've not done this type thing. It's just, we've done this.
It's never a one-up thing. Christmas, or usually what we do pantomime for Christmas.
Every Christmas, don't
it's
we?
More, yeah. We usually do a Christmas dinner like in January, because it's more like, oh my God, I can't believe we did that TV show, or we did this, or we did... this charity thing.
It's normally what's next, what are we doing next?
Yeah.
No, you know what? Everybody does that, like end of year post, like, I'm so grateful to have done this year. I'm like, I can't even remember what I did last week, let alone at the beginning of the year. I have to scroll through Instagram and be like, oh yeah, I did that TV show, or I did this, or we filmed that. And I think that's one thing that's quite nice. You're like, well, we did do a lot this year, but now we need to do this year.
Just happy I've made it another year now.
I've literally said here, my next question is, what does the future hold? Curtis, when are you on I'm a Celeb?
Yeah. Well, guys, it's all signed and done. I'm on this year. No, I wish. No, I don't know. I'd love to do it. I would love
brilliant
to do
on
it.
That TV show.
Fabulous show.
Not in Wales. In
Heading out to Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be brilliant.
And you know what?
Because you ask so many questions. Like on Love Island, you asked so many questions that it was hilarious.
Yeah, well, I'm just an inquisitive person. I like to, you know, just talk to people pretty much. That's why I think
I'm a Celeb would be brilliant.
And I truthfully don't feel any of the tasks would scare me, okay? Right, I don't think they would. But
it's
this
not
is
tasks, the, it's the talking that makes more insane.
No,
than
but
task,
I, yeah, but it's a task which people are like, oh my God, I could never do that. I don't think they would scare me, and that's why I would like to try it.
Yeah, I feel like
I think there would be one.
Classes, don't you?
Well, no, because I honestly think I would be fine, and then all of a sudden, something would just catch me out.
It's the smell,
and I don't know what it would be, and then all of a sudden, I would crap myself.
Eating,
and something
eating.
Would go. Yeah, I think I'd throw up straight away. Actually, we've done some forfeits for a project we did a while ago.
You did not.
Every eating challenge I did, well, I just threw up. If it was a spoonful of mustard to strumming that horrible smelly fish to the world's hottest chili, I threw up every time.
God, I bet you were popular.
And, in AJ's flat as well.
Oh, no. So what is it then when you look ahead, you've got opportunities ahead of you. What is it that you want to achieve the most? What is that goal? What's the end goal?
Something, the end goal is to have our own TV program, host it, be presenting it, having fun on there, some game show, and also owning the rights to it and selling it across the world. You know, that'd always be lovely as well.
Right now, we're putting a lot of time and effort into our YouTube channel, which is Bros Talk Supercars. It's kind of going to different car events, driving cars. We just got our race license, actually, so we've been doing some racing. And really, like, cars have always been a passion, but we've never really had time to do it. And after the pandemic and the world opened up more so now, we're like, well, let's do it. We put a video out every single week, two videos out a week sometimes. And we're loving it. We're loving building a new audience and having fun and doing things that we just love, driving expensive, fast cars, to be honest.
Any cars, yeah.
So definitely that's like a massive thing.
That is what we are focusing
but
on.
But at the end of the day, we're entertainers, we're presenters. We want to be presenting. We want to be doing more entertaining, and hosting red carpets is always fun. And daytime TV actually sounds so boring when you say daytime TV, but actually it's so fun because you talk about the most randomest things. Like yesterday, I had Judge Rinder on GMB talking about hair loss or going gray. I was like, how random, GMB, Judge Rinder, Rob. Like, it was just like, daytime TV is quite funny, actually.
And then also, you know, just to cap it all off, I'd love to be in a film as well.
Oh, very good.
Throw that out there, you know, just...
just something small.
A bit of salt to sprinkle on the old dinner there.
Tom, you heard it here, buddy.
Yeah.
So my final question that I ask every guest, and guests, plural, that come on the show is, what does the word headstrong mean to you?
Headstrong means to me somebody who commits to what they say and creates actions in a strong way. So if they say and they want to do something and it makes them happy and it doesn't matter about what the world around them is doing, they'll go for that, whatever it may be. It could be painting. It could be doing a mathematician equation. It could be go-karting. Whatever it is that you enjoy doing, you stick to it and you ignore and forget what anybody else says, and you don't let the world around you affect you doing what you love to do. And that's being headstrong and confident in yourself, your body, and what you do, in my eyes.
Yeah, I think headstrong to me means quite simply, I will achieve it. Whatever anybody else says, does, obstacles, ups, downs, left, right, it's like, I'll get there. It doesn't matter. It's the only way I approach life. Like when I start dancing, I'll become world champion. Well, I'll do it. Like, what's going to stop you? The only thing that's going to stop you is yourself. So I will get there.
Being headstrong, believing in what you want to do and not letting the knocks knock you down.
100%. Chaps, yeah. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode. I really enjoyed this chat. I wish you all the very best in the future.
I feel like I need to ask you, like, what's your...
Yeah.
Seeing as though, obviously, you talk to so many people, what's your version of what's headstrong mean to you?
So when I talk about headstrong, I define it as believing in yourself, talking about your vulnerabilities, and reinforcing your self-worth.
Yeah, sweet.
Which is exactly how I define it. That's how I put it in all my emails to my sponsors. Yeah. I think with headstrong, it sometimes has negative connotations in terms of it's almost that determination where you have the blinkers down and you don't acknowledge other people. And you know, you just want to get to the end goal. Whereas actually, I think that being headstrong is you're almost self-aware of yourself. You know, I think you need to be aware of your emotions. As you say, you've got to actually understand your own mental health, because sometimes if you overreact to something or you get angry to something, if you actually were watching that situation, is that appropriate behavior? Or is that, like, if you are actually aware of yourself, you're like, absolutely, that's just, you got to really just hone it in, take control. And it's just that control element, I think, of everything that you do. And I think that that's really...
So taking accountability for all of your actions.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important. And also, I think something that I'm... Obviously, we actually haven't talked about it, but it's just one of those things where, for a guy especially, I think it's so important to talk about your emotions. I'm a very, very emotional person. And I will happily talk about if I've had a bad day or a good day, if I'm feeling down. And I think that's really, really important. And I think there is, especially that older generation, just refuse to talk about their emotions and feelings, and they bottle it up.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, let's go full gas canister, they will just explode. You know, and it's not healthy.
Yeah.
No, I think the one point you said is really good, the accountability for your actions, positive, negative, like, I've done this good, I've done this bad, like, how would you look at yourself from the third person? Yeah, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a very high, yeah.
That's a whole other episode.
That's a whole other podcast. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
No, honestly, thank you so much. So great to talk to you. And it's so good to hear your opinion of what Headstrong was as well. Yeah, it makes us think as well.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. That was
love
great.
It. A huge, huge thank you to AJ and Curtis Pritchard for joining me on the podcast. It's been great to have them on. I really enjoyed chatting to them and indeed seeing their dynamic and how they work. It's so interesting that they had the same upbringing, but have such different perspectives and outlooks on life, which is really interesting, and I thank them for coming on. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do hit follow, subscribe, and share it with your family and friends. It really does help podcasts like mine. I will see you next week for another episode of Headstrong.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.